And we're back, another edition Stripe Show podcast. I'm your host, Travis Holton. Thank you for making this part of your day, a special one here today on a Monday. Usually we wait for instruction for a Thursday, but we're going to bump it up. In fact, we're going to give you a little double shot instruction here this week on the Stripe Show podcast because, Jason Kokrak, as you know, has won on the PGA Tour for the third time now after winning in Houston on Sunday. Birdied four of the last five holes down the stretch to get his third win. Three wins now in 13 months. And I'm out here at Scottsdale National right now. We're filming the College Showcase event, second annual event presented by PXG. Got the hat on. And I got to thinking, I was like, you know, there's another PXG guy.
I don't have my hat on. No golf for me today.
And he happens to be a PXG guy, and he's the coach of Jason Kokrak. So I was like, I've got to reach out to Drew Steckel, and we're doing instruction on a Monday. Here he is, coach of Kokrak. Drew, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no golf for me today. I mean, after that weekend of, you know, that, I was like, I was potentially going to be at Sea Island, and then, you know, logistically it was tough and all that. So today is my kind of day to catch up on everything.
Yeah. Well, sit back, enjoy, because I know you spent a lot of time working with your players. Kokrak, you've got to be so pleased the way that he's been playing here over the last 13 months, three wins. This is big stuff here, you know, from Jason Kokrak. I want to get into his game. But, you know, give my audience a sense of what that conversation was like. Did you text? Did you do a phone call after the win on Sunday?
We did both. We talked right after. We talked Saturday night, and we talked Sunday right after he got done. And, you know, from where he was, you know, Golf Channel kind of did a little thing where he did his interview, and they were talking about from where he was on Tuesday and the amount of times I talked to him on the phone. He didn't believe he was in shock that week turned out to be a win, because it's not like he was going in on a Tuesday saying, I just need to do this and I'm going to win. It was literally like lessons on the phone, figuring out what to do that week. And let's try to just go see what happens.
So what'd you guys talk about? Was he struggling with his swing?
He was struggling with his swing in a little bit. He played two events in Vegas, and, you know, he took a stretch off after East Lake, and then he kind of came into Vegas and he hit it pretty well at Shriners. And then CJ Cup, he played, you know, he's defending there and he didn't play great on Thursday, and he was kind of fighting his swing here and there. And, you know, I knew he was kind of, he shut it down for 3 weeks after that. And then he was coming back to Houston, wanted to finish off the year with a few tournaments. And, you know, the swing stuff with him is he likes to see his ball draw quite a bit. So when he doesn't see, you know, it start right and draw a good amount, and he feels like he's kind of hitting weak right shots, or it's like, you know, he has to kind of see the curve. And then he's played a pretty big draw his whole career. So as far as that goes with his swing, we had to kind of clean up his leg work gets off. He gets, you know, he gets up and under it with his pelvis. He's got, you know, kind of the pattern that he's always had with that outside loop, and he always shallows it a ton. So when he feels like he's not shallow enough, or he's not kind of swinging more in to out, that's when he starts fighting the swing.
Mm. So you encourage him to shallow it more, get the path working like more out to the right. Are there drills?
Essentially. Yeah. Because, you know, if he tries to get it kind of in line with his hands or in line coming down his ball, it's kind of a neutral path, and he doesn't really, he'd rather have it go more right and start right and then draw back versus if he kind of feels like he's steep or it's outside of people, you know, in his positions in his swing, he really starts to fight it because he doesn't like to play a cut, and that's not his shot. He just doesn't like to see, if he plays a fade, it's an in to out fade. He doesn't like to play pull fades, steep fades at all.
So for him coming down, would the feeling of as he shallows it, because he kind of works it out in front of him. And I want to ask you here in a second about that. Kind of his finger kind of comes off, right?
His finger does come off. Yep. He's got the thumb movement. Yep.
But when he shallows it, does he feel like the club head's actually behind his hands when he's coming down? And then from there, like the exit plane is kind of more out in front of him.
Yep. And that kind of like bleeds into his posture changing, where, you know, people see, oh, he stands up or this and this, like people think that they stand up. It's like, well, he stands up because he feels steep. So when he feels like he's getting his left arm out and over it at you know, in his downswing, then he'll find a way to get his leg work will start reacting to that because he's always been so shallow. He can stay really forward in his tilts. Kind of like a Sergio move where everybody sees him and he's staying really forward and down. Jason does, you know, and he's always done that. And you just kind of have to figure out ways of saying things. And with tour players, as you know, it's, you know, you have to come up with what they're thinking and figure out I've got to think what his brain is thinking when he's hitting a ball and go through it and go, okay, well, what is he feeling? How is he feeling this? What feel will work for him? Not kind of like my opinion of, okay, you need to change this and just do this and go play. I have to make him trust himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the psychology aspect of it. We talk about that a lot here on the podcast, and it's like, it's one thing to say, hey, let's just get the number on TrackMan to be +4 to the right. It's not that easy. It's like, you know, like that's the number. And then it's like, okay, to do that, let's just feel the club head a little bit more behind the hand. Well, it's not that easy, right? Because you've got to get into the player's head and how they're perceiving it, how they're feeling it, which can change so much, I would imagine, from week to week, right? Because coming in, you know, he can be very different this week than he was last week. That's the ever-changing dynamic of these conversations that you have with a player, I would imagine.
And you do. And things, you know, things change. And once you kind of get into patterns with guys, it's like, well, when do you do that drill too much? Or when does that drill overkill? Mm-hmm. And how do you find a blueprint of not, you know, that exaggeration eventually turns into what they do. And they're so skilled, and tour players are just, you know, outliers as far as their skill level. So you have to be very careful because, you know, they're so talented. They'll find a way to do things that you get them to. So it's a fine line of how much and when you say things to tour players, and the timing of it, because there's times where, yeah, okay, we'll go over your stats for the end of the year and figure out what you need to do. But, you know, it's always evolving and changing, and their feels and their bodies feels different, and the weather's different. You know, all, like Saturday morning, it was freezing when he had to finish his second round, and you know, his body didn't feel the same. And he was seven over par through his last eight holes. He was seven under par for the tournament on Saturday morning, and then did the re-tee at 7 a.m. and had a bogey and a triple, and I think two bogeys, a triple and a double, and went from 6 under on the day to 1 over par.
Mm.
And, you know, nothing changed. You know, like there's nothing that really changed in his swing or whatever's going on, but he struggled around the greens a little bit, and you know, that kind of was exposed at that time. But, you know, with that kind of level of golfer, it's amazing how good they are in their skill. So it's fun to work with that. And it's also, you got to be careful at times when they start to do what, you know, certain things.
Yeah. He got better as the week went on, 66, 65, on the weekend. So he certainly found that sweet spot as far as getting that club head a little behind the hands, coming down and then through. What's Jason's wrist condition coming down? Does he kind of pull it down a little bit, or is it?
He's got a little bit of like a more of a dragging back. He kind of has a little bit of a drag to, you know, a little bit of a lag move, but he's not overly loaded with, I would say, you know, he's pretty flat. You know, he's not like flexing his lead wrist or anything. He really doesn't mess with any of that stuff, but he's got a pretty good change of direction, I would say. And he doesn't have, you know, kind of like a pull drag move. At times he can get into that with short irons and stuff. And we kind of work on that move because it'll just become so draggy through the ball.
Yeah. When he does that, and you talked about the pelvis kind of like running up underneath him sometimes, when he feels steep coming down, then he tries to manufacture the draw a bit by getting the handle higher and the pelvis come up underneath.
Exactly. And then the legs start straightening up. He gets on his toes. He kind of, you know, he'll get up at his toes, and then he feels like he's jumpy at it or whatever it is. And, you know, he just finds a way to compensate, and then his timing's off, and then he feels like, I can't feel the bottom. And he's got really fast hand speed. I mean, his hands are pretty incredible. He used to have like 130 club head speed as a kid. I mean, he doesn't gear up and try to smash it every time, but he's a big guy and he's got some serious power when he wants it. So
yeah,
you know, we cleaned up his irons and that stuff.
Yeah, he runs under the radar, right? As far as like long off the tee. Like, I don't think his name is brought up enough. And, you know, he'll live in the positive strokes hand off the tee most of the time, you know, when he's getting that little nice little draw off there off the tee. This week in Houston, you know, his approach game, positive 6.4. So he really turned it on, strokes gain approach. And then, my goodness, what a putting week. Positive 8.7. I've got to ask you, so was it as simple with his putting that he just lengthened out his putter 1 inch?
It was his caddy, David Robinson, who's a great player in itself. So it's really beneficial that he trusts David so much, because David's a great player and David's unbelievable putter, unbelievable short game. He just didn't hit it far enough to play PGA Tour golf. So he kind of was always around him and worked on his putting and helped him with his putting. And he goes, "Hey, you just need to lengthen it, dude. You're not even gripping it. Let's lengthen this and see how this goes. You look comfortable over it when it's longer." And he trusts David's reads. I mean, D-Rob is an unbelievable green reader. So when he gets on greens and D-Rob just basically reads every putt and says, "Hit it here and do this and hit it this speed." And he just is like, it's like playing a video game for him, because people don't understand how good he's putting now, and he's got confidence with it. And it's a team effort with that. And that's the great thing about them, is they're so good at kind of knowing each other very well about it on the greens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun when you see those player caddy dynamics sometimes, when the player's so confident of the caddy's read. He's just like looking at him like, "Where do you want me to hit it?" You know, like, "Okay, right there." And the cat, and obviously the player's so skilled, they just step up and hit it. And of course the caddy, not only can they read the green, but he's so dialed into how his player hits the putt, right? Because, you know, not every stroke is exactly the same in the way that ball's coming off. So they know the way that the player hits that putt, and then match it up with the speed that they hit it at. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that.
There's a ton that goes. Yeah. And even club selection, like, you know, people were like, "Oh, the tournament, you know, this on 17. I mean, that's a nervous shot. That's a hard shot over that water. And, mm-hmm. you know, D-Rob had to basically just say, "This is the club. You can hit it as hard as you want. It won't go over the back, and it's going to cover the right side by that right front flag. So you're going to hit it here, and this is what you're going to do." And there's so much trust that's built up in that, because, you know, he's nervous, even with a three shot, four shot. I mean, that golf course is not like he's, you know, there's a lot of trouble in that golf course. So
you mentioned Vegas, where he won back in 2020. That was his first win, the CJ Cup.
Yep.
Absolutely crushed it on the greens there that week too. Positive 10.3. Then he wins the Charles Schwab. And that was the second win in May. Now here he is again in November with his third win. I mean, did you just see a difference in him after he got his first win? It's like, okay, I know how to do this now. And like, did the confidence just go through the roof? Because the win equity here of this guy, all of a sudden, when he gets in the hunt, I mean, he's clearly not afraid. He's got the confidence. He birdies four of the last five on Sunday, and he gets another win. I mean, did you see a difference after his first win?
Yeah, absolutely. And before he won CJ Cup, he was playing very good and made it to East Lake the year. I mean, he was kind of getting on this steady path to consistency. And as soon as he won, and I knew once he won, it was going to be, you know, unbelievable, because his confidence, once now he knows he can do it. And he's kind of been through all of that. So, you know, he enjoys that situation now. I think that's what's cool, is you see him kind of in that moment on a Sunday with nine holes to go, and you can see he's starting to feed off that energy, and he's like, I'm going to do this. And, you know, he's not like, I'm just trying to see if I can do it. He knows he can do it.
Yeah. You know, he was on the Stripe Show podcast about a month ago with Froggy. Froggy does Wednesdays, and I've never met Jason in person. I watched the podcast. You know him very well. Tell my audience, like, what kind of person is Jason Kokrak? He seems like a total, like, laid back dude, just kind of roll with the punches, go with the flow. I mean, he lives in Cleveland, for crying out loud. Exactly. How many PGA Tour players live in Cleveland? I mean, what kind of guy is this?
His family's all there. And he was like, he was in Charlotte for a while, and he goes, I don't care. I just want to live my life. This is where my family is. I'm going to get away from golf. It's snow on the ground all winter, but he's just a normal down to earth guy. You would never know anything if you ever saw him outside of golf and knew who he was and you were a golf world, because he's just such a humble, down to earth guy, and he treats everybody really well on his team. I mean, he's just a genuine guy to people, and it's a refreshing person to be around, because he'll go out of his way to do things and help, and he's just a very caring guy, and he deserves all the success he has. He has a great family, his wife and everybody. You know, just a simple Midwest kind of life is how he lives. And he when he's home, he gets checks out of golf, and he's, you know, getting snow off his driveway.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I did the show in the podcast last week on Tuesday, Memorial Park, of course, where they played. Great golf course. Really a challenging, obviously, golf course for these guys. Anytime they keep it down in the single digits. I mean, this is best players in the world that all fall seems like 23, 24, 25 under right. is winning these tournaments. You know, it's a course that historically, you know, the guys that have done well there, and this is only what, year two, three at Memorial Park?
Year two, year two or three, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But historically, and when we were doing our research, like the guys that really get the ball up and down have done well here. Every player has an opportunity and a weakness. Kokrak, for him, his short game, is his weakness, right? So when I look at this, and he lost four strokes gained around the green, I mean, I'm a little surprised, to be honest with you. And I mean this in complete respect to Kokrak's game, that he went in there
right
and won at this golf course.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I knew on Tuesday, and I talked to David about him, like, if he misses greens, it's going to be a battle, you know, because it puts so much pressure on your ball striking at times, and then you have no confidence on any shot there. And, you know, he spent some time on a short game with Jeff Pierce, and Jeff Pierce has kind of come through and, you know, gives him stuff to work on in that. And there's a lot of things in his pattern that Jeff tries to kind of bleed in there a little bit. So he, you know, he's definitely conscious. He knows that, you know, hey, okay, let's get this better. Let's do this. So we don't really want to always like beat a dead horse and say, oh, okay, you're terrible at this or you're terrible at that. And obviously you knew if he was going to miss a green, it's going to be tough because there's no confidence with it.
Right. But it just shows you how great his approach game was and how great his putting was. I mean, Drew, you've been out there for a while. I look at the PGA Tour, the modern game, and, you know, this is not unusual for a player to go in and win losing strokes around the green. You know,
No. Versus Kevin Na, who I work with too. And you just watch Kevin chip and you're like, is this even possible? You know, I've got the spectrum of it. You watch Kevin and you're like, anywhere. And it's not like Kevin's short game is just impressive when he's practicing. You see Kevin hit shots in tournaments and they're like, this is insane. Like you are that good. Like Kevin gets on the greens and around the greens and you're like, this guy's not even human.
Which makes Kevin, to me, I think, the most underrated player on the PGA Tour. I really do. In today's modern game, Kevin doesn't hit it very far. He's not overpowering golf courses. And he wins with his strategy. Obviously, he keeps it in front of him. And he gets the ball up and down. He doesn't lose strokes. And he wins. And to me, in today's era, Kevin Na is one of the most underrated players in the game. Because you usually see, all right, guys, get it out there, 300-plus.
Right.
Consistently. Approach game kind of dominates, for the most part, the PGA Tour, and then you got to have your good putting weeks, right? And that's kind of it. And you can kind of get by with a mediocre short game,
right,
for the most part, in today's modern PGA Tour game. You agree with that?
I agree with that. And you can the ball strikers out there, you just see them and you're like, okay, well, this guy, they're going to win. They're going to do this. Yeah. And you can see that, and you just see, okay, well, this guy drives it like this. So you watch that and you go, all right, well, it's going to be tough to beat this guy. Like when Rory's on, you know, if Rory's on, you're like, he played with Jason the first 2 days at CJ Cup. And I was like, Rory's back. You can see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Rory's a whole nother conversation, right? Cause he, you know, now he leaves, he's gone from Pete now and he's back to Bannon, you know, where's that at? So that's just a whole nother, conversation. But yeah, I mean, you work with Kevin Na as well, who's had a nice season. I love watching Kevin Na play golf.
He's fun to play. He's fun.
he's must watch. I mean, you got to go out there and watch Kevin Na play in the way that he attacks these golf courses, the shots that he hits around the green, his strategy. He's like a modern day Fred Funk in many ways, you know, or Kevin, you know, Kevin's short game. I worked with Fred for many years. Kevin's short game, I think, is better than Fred's. But strategically, in the way they would go around the golf course and make up for distance and hang in there. And then when the time was coming to win, they would, they're kind of bulldogs, man. Yeah. They're not afraid to go out and capture that win. So, let me ask you about Kokrak here as you look ahead here. The RSM is this week, last tournament of the year. Jason is there. He's playing.
He is.
Kevin Na is playing.
Kevin is not playing, and I do not believe Jason will be playing next week. So
neither one of them are playing this week.
No, I will have Doug Gim there and Danny Lee and Brett Druitt.
Okay.
Those will be the three that I have there. And Kevin's next tournament will be Shark Shootout with Kokrak. They're going to play together.
Let me ask you this. A little bit of an offseason coming up. A little bit of an offseason for these players before they kick it back again. You look at Kokrak, 3 wins here, 13 months. How much of the conversation now, you mentioned his short game coach, and how much of a conversation now with Kokrak is like, okay, let's get ourselves a major championship. You know, like, what do we got to do to get a major championship? His best finishes: Masters 49th, PGA, T19, US Open, T17, Open Championship, T26. At least my observation when I look at this and I study Jason, he's long enough. His approach game, I would say, is right there. It's good enough. His putting, well, you have positive eight and positive nine in putting.
Right,
certainly
right,
good enough.
Yeah.
Is the opportunity now to become a better than average short game player? And if he can do that, and I say better than average, PGA Tour standard, by the way.
Yep.
You understand? PGA, better than average short game, confident, he realistically could win a major, couldn't he?
Absolutely. Because that's the thing with those majors is, you know, everybody's going to miss greens and everybody's going to have, you know, hack out, hit it here and this and that. So you watch the guys like, you know, Rom, Rory, all these guys, DJ, all them, their games are very polished, right? All aspects of them. So I think it's going to be getting into the kind of the mindset of how to prepare a little differently for him. Cause I think, you know, you put a lot of not that he puts a lot of pressure on majors. This was his first Masters, the one with in November of last year at this time. And he never had been to, you know, and so he kind of like had this whole thing and didn't play well. I think he did miss the cut, and then he made the cut this year, but just kind of getting comfortable in those situations. And I think the Ryder Cup thing, not getting picked and that kind of disappointment kind of lingered around for a couple months. Cause that was a big deal. And, you know, he really wanted to be on that team and he really wants to be on those teams. So, you know, it's kind of finding the energy and the fuel that kind of keeps you going, because the year is so long and it's so much golf and it's just never ending. So it's, how do you come into the year fresh and go, okay, I only have 3 weeks off and this is my off season. So what do I do? You know, like, how it never ends.
Right.
So it kind of getting the energy and not being burned out by the time April hits, or not being burned out by the US Open because you played 5 in a row or what, 3 in a row.
Yeah, I would have to think this is going to be different for him now coming into this year, more so than any other. He's obviously got financial security. He's obviously got nothing to worry about as far as where he wants to play, right, on the PGA Tour. So you kind of go into the season and be like, you know, look, the goals perhaps are changing now, right? Like, he wants to be on the Ryder Cup. He's right there.
Yeah.
He's ranked
President's Cup, all that stuff.
Yeah, he's ranked 19th, and no, he's ranked 29th in the world now. So he's starting to enter a whole different realm of just conversation, right? With Jason Kokrak as a household name that could be now competing for a major championship. But what does that look like in preparation leading up to the first one, at Augusta? I got to ask, you mentioned Doug Gim.
Yep.
Love Doug.
Yep.
Love watching, that dude strike the golf ball, right?
It's, I mean, impressive. He is such a good ball striker.
He is such a good ball striker.
And it's a unique pattern, as you know. You watch the swing and the way it is and what he does, and it's very unique. But he has beautiful wrist angles and beautiful wrist, and his face is so under control. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I'm starting to see some improvement in his putting, right? I mean, Doug Gim is getting closer, isn't he?
He is, and he's working with Derek Ueda and Chris Choate, his putting coaches. So he hit it really good for a good stretch and hit it amazing. And he finally got to the point where he's got to get some putting help. And then he's with Chris and Derek a lot, and they are, you know, he's on the Quintech all the time. He's really detailed in his practice. You'll see him on the green, and when he's out there with Chris, I mean, they're filming with their – I mean, Chris has his camera at a certain angle, and he's filming eight-footers every time he hits a putt on the green during a practice round.
Yeah, I was talking to Derek. I caught up with Derek a few months ago. You said Chris who?
Chris Choate. That's he was mentored through Derek. Very, very good guy. He lives in Vegas now, and he's kind of helping out with Derek's guys.
Nice. Yeah, I have been – I caught up with Ueda and we were talking about Doug, and really since that conversation, I think he was just kind of getting going with them. You can start to see some improvement out of Doug Gim. And if Doug can turn his short game, Doug can turn his putting into a strength.
Oh yeah.
And look out.
Yeah. And he's really grinding on it. So he's, you know, they broke it down to the bit, you know, and that's the great thing about having access to this stuff as a tour player. You got these guys that are just like so knowledgeable with their putting and breaking it down to every detail of it. And then getting the right putter and the way the ball is rolling. And they don't realize, you know, people don't realize how much detail can go into this stuff and the access you have to this in golf now.
Yeah. Are you amazed just how specialized it is now? And it's getting even more specialized now. And I was talking with Dr. Brett McCabe, and I asked him, I was like, when is too much,
right?
Too much for a player to process. I was like, do these teams at some point have to get smaller? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, I think they're going to get bigger, because I think the specialization of the sport's just going to get bigger.
It's just, yeah. And I mean, it's amazing. You got like a guy that does your chipping. You got a guy that does swing. You got a guy that does training. You got a guy, you know, you have all these different things. Sometimes I think it depends on their personality, but yeah, I agree with you on that. There is a limitation. I mean, you do need to limit how many cooks are in your kitchen, so to speak, because if you have all these ideas, everybody's got an answer and this, at some point you just have to put the ball in the ground, and you need to go tee off, and you need to just go hit the ball, and you need to play golf. You can't analyze every shot you've ever hit in your life and go, I have to do this, and this is my day, and it's planned, and my, you know, it can be, sometimes you got to just live your life and just go hit a ball.
Yeah. There's no blueprint to the balance of that, is there? You have to know your guy. And even when you know, I'm like getting in there, man, it's still, when to say this, when not to say this,
you could go map out 3D in every aspect of their swing, you know, every week and say, well, we're going to calibrate the machine. We're going to have this as our database. We're going to get whatever it is. And at some point the guy's like, all right, well, I don't need to know that. I need to just go home, right? I don't need to know my, and so they don't really care. I mean, I don't really have that many guys that are that overly technical that want to know everything about golf and golf swings. And they look at, you know, they're that, well, I would say curious mind as far as that goes. But at some point it's like, all right, well, you're here to compete, and you just, okay, do this and this and this and go.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's times to look under the hood, right? And then, you know, and kind of go through that as the coach. But then how you feed that information to the player and when is really kind of the art of it. And, you know, I think you do a great job of that, clearly with Jason, and, you know, developing him, but keeping him in that play mode. And obviously what the work that you guys did this week over the phone.
Right. Literally these guys got his headphones in and he's in on the round. I'm like, this guy's calling me. I mean, I was it was Tuesday afternoon. I'm like, am I going to get on a plane tonight? Like, is this guy going to tee it up? He might not play. He said, you know, he's thinking he's shooting 80. I'm like, interesting. Okay. All right. And I kind of like that. It's fun to have the challenges, and it's fun to work through that adversity with people. And that's the cool thing about a coach. It's like, you know, everybody wants to congrats. That's great. And when guys win and all that, but there's so much that goes on, and there's so much like people you teach and guys you coach, you know, all the things that you're doing behind the scenes that is never noticed. And, you know, it's such a selfless thing being a golf coach, because it's, you know, you just have to have that mindset of like, I'm going to get into this with them, because you know how golf is. It's hard. It's really hard. And people have a lot of mental things that go on with golf. So you're, you know, playing psychologist as much as you are a coach.
Yeah. Especially, you know, especially when you're doing it for a living. Yeah. It's, we could, I could talk forever on it. I'll finish with this. I told you I was at Scottsdale National. It's called Showcase Event. It's presented by PXG. It's a great event.
Beautiful.
We've got four of the top collegiate players here on the men's side, two from the women's side, and then two celebrities, and they're all playing for charity.
Awesome.
And there's a guy here. His name is Eugenia Chikara. He's from Spain.
Okay.
Plays for Oklahoma State. He was the number one ranked player in Spain 8 straight years as a junior golfer. And yesterday in the practice round, he shot 59, broke the course record. First time he's ever seen the course. Yeah.
Wow.
And he had his new equipment. He got all his new product in for PXG. He went out, played, shoots 59. The course record was 61, breaks it by 2. And he comes in, he's like, I think I need to bend my irons 1 degree. I think they're 1 degree too upright.
And you're like, no way. Yeah, exactly. And you just shot 59. I mean,
it's just amazing. I spent all morning with these guys. RJ Pankey's here, who's won pretty much every college event in the last, three months out of University of Washington. He was part of the Pepperdine national championship team. Great kid. Sat there and watched him just pure it for about 2 straight hours. I mean, these guys are just so damn
so good. The college kids are incredible. The level of where golf is going, and you know, you've been in golf for, you know, a lot longer than I have, and you just see these people, and it's like, how good are these people? You know, like these kids, you see them, and they're 11 years old, and you're, how is this possible at this age?
It really is amazing, and just with such ease too. You know, they're really good kids, and just with such ease in the way that they just go about it. You know, like, and I was talking to them on the range, and I was like, you know, tell me about your ball striking, and what are you working, thinking about? And he's like, man, I don't really work on anything. I'm like, okay. And he's like, yeah, you hit the ball pretty long and straight every single time. I'm like,
oh, sweet. Yeah. And you're like, you're a lot better at golf than I am. That's the only, you know, like, it's like me when I go work on my own game, I'm like, oh man, I am all, oh, this is, you know, like, it's funny, you know, people are like, do you golf? I'm like, yeah, no, last thing I do is go recreationally play for myself. Like, I'm at a golf course every day.
Yeah, it's, it really is mind boggling. I'm pulling up the roster here, you know, right now, and every one of them, we were getting some numbers, all four guys, you know, are 305 plus, yardage wise, cruising speed, you know, just cruising speed, 305 plus, you know, they can reach back, get it up there, 325, 330, if they need to, which they probably will in this course. Cause as you know, this course is pretty open, in the fairway. So they'll let it out.
They're going to send it.
We've got a young lady here from Arkansas. She's comfortably 285, 290 off the tee with just grace and ease. I mean, it's amazing to watch. So anyway, it'll air in December. More details on that to come for the audience. But Drew, I appreciate your time. This is really cool. Congratulations. We had Kobrak on. Now we have you on. Kevin Na wins. Hey, no, wait. When Doug Gim wins next year, I'm going to have you and Derek on at the same time. Because I'm a big Doug Gim fan. I want Doug Gim to get to the winner's circle.
He's a great guy. Great kid.
Yeah.
Well, right, thank you for having me,
buddy. Have a great week.
Chat about it.
Take a week off. Go open up a bottle of wine.
I'm going to go take a nap because I don't think I'm still like getting my adrenaline. Just, you know, people are like, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty exhausted after that. You know, I didn't hit a shot just because of the, you know, anxiety. You know, you're just like, the adrenaline's going just as much as, you know, I'm watching it on TV going, okay.
Like watching your kid.
It's
crazy how invested. Yeah.
It's fun. So thanks for having me.
You bet, Drew. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Travis.